Jesus had believed in something so much that he died for it, and I could never imagine doing that. But I'd just given up a scholarship, probably, part of my future, because I believed in the truth. Wow. Maybe I finally did find the thing I'd die for. I only had a few moments to think about that before Rafe tore back the curtain and ran up to me. "Wow," he said. "That was unexpected." I managed a smirk. "Ta-da! Scholarship gone." "Maybe. Probably. How do you feel?" I thought about it. Rafe was smiling at me, and I couldn't help but smile back. "Lighter," I said.
"Lighter?"
I nodded, and Rafe hugged me. I hugged him back hard. Then my parents arrived. I pulled away from Rafe, but I kept hold of his hand. Mine shook. My mother looked a little confused. My father's expression was stone.
"What's this?"
He gestured to our connected hands. "It is what it is," I said. I braced for the verbal assault.
"Let's get going,"
he said, devoid of emotion, and he began to walk off.
"Long drive home."
"I'm not ready," I said. He stopped walking about 10 feet from me, but he didn't turn around.
"I'll wait in the car," he said.
"Dad," I said quietly, "come on." He took a moment, and then he turned and walked back to where I was standing. He spoke very softly.
"How many times do I have to tell you not to embarrass me? And yet you do. I'm embarrassed to be your father."
I looked down. Rafe squeezed my hand. "You're embarrassed to be my dad?"
"Yes," he said.
We stood there in silence. Dad crossed his arms over his chest. I held on to Rafe's hand, feeling about 2 feet tall. I turned and faced Rafe, very aware my parents were across from us. I felt torn between who I was and who I was. And who was I? This empty feeling in my chest, it had always been there. And then there was this new thing, light and warm and totally not empty, and it was pressing down on the empty. I smiled at Rafe, first a small one that matched his sympathetic gaze, and then I looked into Rafe's eyes and I saw him. I saw him, who he was and who he was to me. I smiled bigger and truer. "This is not rocket surgery," I muttered, and he cracked up. Happy Rafe was too much for me to just look at, so I leaned over and hugged him hard. He gasped into my shoulder and I gripped him tight. "I'm not going to lose you again," I said into his arm, and I heard him say back, "No, you won't." I pulled away until we were face to face, and then I kissed him. My father cleared his throat. I didn't react. I kept my lips glued to Rafe's. My dad cleared his throat more. "You can clear your throat until your vocal cords are severed," I thought. "If you want to say something, say something." But I was through with this not saying stuff. It was just not happening anymore. I took a full second before releasing our lip lock and turning to my parents, who were both staring at us slack-jawed. I smiled, the warmest, kindest one I could muster. "This is me," I said. "Me." Me, it turned out, was not something my father was interested in seeing.
"Come on, Marlene,"
he said as he started to walk away. She didn't move.
"Come on, let's beat the traffic."
"Stop it, Richard," she said.
"Excuse me?"
"I said stop it. Stop walking away and stop telling me what to do."
And in the most surprising moment of my life so far, my dad stopped. My mother took over the conversation, and I felt like my heart was dancing in my chest.
"So, sweetheart," she said to me, "you're homosexual?"
I shook my head. "No, I mean, I don't know what I am. I've always liked girls, but now I like Rafe. I don't think I'm gay, but I like Rafe. Love. She squinted at me.
I don't get what that all means. Are you a couple with Rafe?
I nodded and took Rafe's hand.
Well then,
I always thought Cindy was a bit of a wet blanket.
I don't know you too well yet, Rafe. Are you a wet blanket?
No, ma'am, he said, smiling, and he walked over to her and hugged her. She put her arm around his neck.
Well then, good. I don't want any more wet blankets in this family. God knows we have plenty of those.
She looked at my dad.
I also want to let everyone know that I'm selling herbal remedies now.
Not in my store, you ain't, my dad said.
Yes, in our store. And if not, then someplace else. Seriously, Richard, the world is changing. Stop being so darned wet blankety.
As angry as I was at my dad, I could feel what he must be feeling in his chest. Killer of fun. It's not a fun place to be, even if you believe it's the right place to be. And then my dad did it again. He walked away.
I'm not going to listen to this foolishness, he said.
Of course not,
she said once he was gone. Then she turned to us.
I don't know that I'm in love with my friend Hazel, but I sure do like her lots. Is that what you guys have?
I turned to Rafe and swam and sunk in his hazel eyes. Perchance, I said. Dad took their truck and drove back himself. My mom gave me a little time to pack up and say goodbye to people before I drove her home in Gretchen. She sat at one of the picnic tables by the lake and did her knitting while Rafe and I walked back to the dorms hand in hand. Pretty much everybody gawked as we walked by. It was like they were doing the math about all the things I'd said. Some people gave us a what's up or nodded. Some people looked and then looked away. No one said anything mean. My guess was that people were too afraid of me to say anything not nice. Once we got to my room, Rafe threw his arms around me and I threw my arms around him, and we kissed each other for a long time. Part of me wanted to lock the door, but with my mom waiting for us, it felt kinda wrong.
You, sir, are so getting laid when we get back, he said.
I laughed. That's why I did it. I threw everything away, and it was all for sex. He cracked up.
Of course. You sure you don't want to come out to Boulder for the break?
I sat down on the bed. I want to more than anything. But I better go to New Hampshire and deal with my dad.
You and your dad are so different.
I shrugged. Rafe said,
I guess I see where you get your walking away habit from.
Never again. I promise. Never again.
You love him?
He's my dad.
Well, if you decide you want to come to Colorado, just call. My mom has a shit ton of miles, and I'm sure she'd give them to you.
That's really nice. Thanks. And I'd like nothing more. Let's just play it by ear, okay? There was a knock on the door. It was Donnelly. He seemed different when he came in and saw me and Rafe together. He nodded at Rafe and then focused on me.
Well, that was quite a talk, he said.
Uh-huh.
Headmaster Taylor wanted me to let you know that you won't be coming to Florida.
I know, I said. I'm sorry.
He also wanted me to tell you that the Foundation Board will be meeting this coming week about this. You might have lost the award. You probably did.
I'm aware of that.
Why'd you do it?
Because of something you said, actually. You said maybe I'd bought something and didn't even know I'd bought it. You were right, you know. It was time to sell.
He looked between me and Rafe like he was watching a tennis match. I wondered if he followed what I was saying or if he even heard it. Maybe it was the first time anyone had ever told Donnelly that he'd said something to them that mattered.
Okay, he said. Well, okay.
Have a good break, Carver. I support your lifestyle, by the way. People have the right to choose whatever lifestyle they want.
There are so many things wrong with that sentence,
Rafe said, but I waved him off. Thanks, I said to Donnelly.
I support your lifestyle, too.
I said goodbye to Rafe, who was going to a hotel near the airport in Boston for an early morning flight. On the way out to meet my mom, I ran into Mendenhall, who shook his head when he saw me.
Dude, he said. What the hell, dude?
I shrugged.
You left the team in the lurch. That's some selfish shit.
I wish I could go to Florida. I did what I had to do.
You're a strange guy, Carver. You gay, too?
I ignored the question and focused on the comment.
You're finally getting it, I said. I'm a strange guy, and you'll never be a strange guy, which is too bad for you. So maybe we'll just play baseball together and not worry about it, huh?
Whatever, dude, he said. If you tell anyone where you got the answer key, I will ruin your life.
I won't, I said. I did what I did. You want to do the right thing, it's on you.
He walked away, and I knew he'd never fess up. He wasn't that kind of kid. And he wouldn't be that kind of man, and that was okay with me. None of my business. As I drove north with my mom and Gretchen, I was thinking that spring break was going to feel eternal. 2 weeks vacation plus one for my suspension. I had no interest in being up in Alton, but it was the right thing to do. To fix things with my dad. Or whatever was like fixing things.
Are you afraid of what Dad's gonna say about your herbal remedies when we get back? I asked my mom.
Nah, she said, but something in her voice betrayed the words. I guess when you've spent 20 years married to someone who treats you a certain way, and you live in a box, it has to be scary leaving that box.
You?
At first, I thought she meant was I afraid of her burgeoning career as an herbalist, but then I realized she meant was I afraid of what Dad was going to say to me. I sighed.
I don't know.
Mom didn't bring up the fact that I was dating a boy, and she just found out. She didn't bring up the suspension. I didn't say any more about the fact that she had stood up to Dad for the first time ever, as far as I knew. Neither of us talked about the future, like what was going to happen when we got back to Alton.
Looks like rain, she said.
Yep.
Hope Richard got the cows in the barn. They get persnickety about their food when they're all wetted up.
I'm sure he did it as soon as he got back.
How about Czech dumplings for dinner?
It was familiar. Sometimes familiar is good.
Sounds great, Mom. Sounds great.
Chapter 44. A freezing rain had begun to fall. We arrived back at the farm, and the lack of sound beyond the thump of cold precipitation hit me hard. I was back. This was it. I had nowhere else to go, and I was going to have to face my deeply disappointed dad. I deposited my bag in my room, and Luke reclined on his bed, playing a game on the same Game Boy he'd had since he was about 5.
Hey, I said.
He didn't look up.
I hear you screwed up.
A bit, I said.
He didn't respond, just went back to his game.
Did you hear anything more than that?
He didn't say anything. I wondered what it would have been like to be here when my dad got back. Did he rant? Was he upset? Any emotion at all would have been nice to see, anything besides leaving.
Because if you did, let's just stop this thing where we don't talk about stuff, okay? I said. You and me, we're better than that. Come on, put the game thing down, talk to me.
He tentatively saved his game and sat up, tossing his dirty blonde hair out of his eyes.
So, are you gay?
He asked. I sat down on my bed.
I don't think so. I'm in love with a guy, though.
But you aren't gay? That's weird.
I know,
I mean, no, it doesn't feel weird. It feels like the most natural thing. I never thought about guys, but Rafe just, I don't know. I actually had a girlfriend this past month. She was great, but I liked Rafe better. He threw his legs over the side of the bed and hyperextended his skinny elbows on his mattress. He whispered,
I have lunch with Julie sometimes now, the girl everyone used to call Bulldozer.
That's great, I said.
It's okay.
Do you like her?
I don't know. Maybe. It's hard to come up with questions sometimes.
I didn't really know what to say, and I realized that this was, for my brother, a real conversation. Like when we'd talked in the car after the swimming lesson. That was probably the last time he'd had a conversation with someone in his family. My head hurt thinking about it. I looked at him, and he looked fine. Maybe his was a more right-handed path. Perhaps some people don't feel starved for more the way I always felt when I was growing up. Maybe that was okay, too.
Tell her things about you, I said.
Like what?
Like things you're interested in.
He shrugged and picked up his Game Boy, and I felt this tenderness toward my brother, who would always be exactly who he was. And that was definitely okay. If I had more to say than he did, I could say it.
So anyway, I'm suspended for a week, so I'll be around for a while. The worst part is it'll stay on my school record. Goodbye, top-level college. I barely knew ye.
Yeah, but no school for an extra week. That's awesome.
I didn't say anything because he'd never get that I actually enjoyed school. Meanwhile, Dad is probably never going to talk to me again.
He didn't say much to begin with, though, did he?
My brain went, oh, when I thought about that. Deep.
I love you, surprisingly introspective bro, I said.
He kept playing his game.
I love you too, totally weird older brother.
I glanced out the bedroom window at the barn. Dad still hadn't come out. I'd have seen him. So I waited, all the stuff I wanted to say to him tumbling through my brain. Dad, I'm not going to spend my life being the guy who is afraid to disappoint you. I have other things I want to be. I wished Uncle Max were still alive so I could talk to him. He'd understand. Dinner time came, still no sign of Dad. I asked Luke to check with Mom, see where he was. In the barn, he came back and told me. I stared out my window, waiting, waiting. I didn't eat. Dad didn't eat. Luke and Mom had a meal, and when it was over, Mom came in.
Give it a rest till morning, Benny, she said.
He has to come out at some point.
You know your father. He's a stubborn old mule.
This is not okay, I said. Not anymore. Mom sat down on my bed next to me and put her hand lightly on my knee.
No, he's got to do better. I know it. You know it. Luke even knows it. Only person doesn't know it is your dad.
I stood up. I didn't have to say anything. Mom knew. I bundled up in layers. T-shirt, long-sleeve shirt, sweatshirt, jacket, scarf, hat, gloves. I walked to the wet room outside the kitchen and put on my boots. Mom followed and watched me in silence. I knew she was rooting for me. The dark barn smelled bitter. Bitter, chilly sadness, like you could feel it in the stale air. Unmet potential. Wasted dreams. Chicken crap. Thanks to the moonlight, I could see Dad was in the corner of the chicken stall. Chickens clucked around him. He sat with his knees up, his back slouched against the side of the pen. I'd never seen my dad just sitting before, not in a work area anyway. Hey, I said. His silhouette moved a little bit. He shuffled his behind as if to get more comfortable. Dad, it's me. In the darkness of the barn, I could almost see him shrug. I could feel the air moved by his shoulders' motion. It stung my eyes.
You gonna just live in here now? Try to wait me out?
3 weeks, and I'm not going anywhere.
Still nothing. No words.
Dad? Are you listening, Dad? I know you can hear me. This ends today, whatever this is. You can't just walk away and ignore me anymore when I do something you don't like. You either have to talk to me or... I don't know, but I can't do this anymore. I can't.
Tears now.
I can't take this. I could take a lot of things, but I can't take this, I said.
I turned to leave.
My dad's crusty voice rose from the chicken coop.
You're a cheater now?
It was a stupid choice, I said.
I'll say. And you traded away a college education for what? So you could date a boy? What kind of foolishness is that?
I didn't trade it away. And anyway, losing the scholarship had nothing to do with Rafe. I'll figure it out. I'll find a way to still go to college.
And this Rafe boy, he's nothing more than another rich kid.
That's not true, Dad.
It is true. And what's worse, you're letting him screw you. I don't know what that makes you, but it sure don't make you a carver.
It took every muscle in my body not to walk away.
I swallowed 3 times. 4. It was like I was afraid of the sound of my voice.
I am a carver, I said. I'm as much a carver as you are.
If you're a carver, I'll tell you one thing you are. Not gay. That ain't okay. You ain't doing that while living here. You understand? You want to stay in this family, you'll never talk to that boy again. And you can forget about going back to that school next year. I've had enough of your foolishness.
The words repeated over and over in my brain. You'll never talk to that boy again.
This time, I walked away. I'd promised Rafe I wouldn't, but in this case, I was pretty sure he'd be fine with it. I walked with my head down, away from the barn, away from the house. I took the road toward town, not minding the cold rain beating down on my head, each heavy drop like an assault on my brain. I grabbed my phone out of my pants pocket. I shielded it from the rain and dialed.
Hey, Rafe said.
Hey.
I'm at the hotel.
I'm on an abandoned road in Alton, alone.
You okay?
Nah. Is that ticket still available?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure, let me call my mom. You want directions to the hotel?
The rain around me couldn't touch me. I didn't feel cold, not anymore.
Yes, please.
Chapter 45. The second time Rafe and I flew to Colorado together was very different than the first. The first trip, it was Thanksgiving. The night before, he'd slept in my arms. I was freaking out about it a little, and I knew he was, too, and then we talked about it. I didn't know then that we were freaking out for different reasons, but that wasn't important now. This flight felt to me like I was taking a trip away from my life, like maybe losing my mind a little. In 24 hours, I'd likely given up a college scholarship, been rejected by my father, left my home and stayed in a hotel with my boyfriend for the first time ever. And now I was heading to Boulder for who knows how long. I felt nauseated, and yet goosebumps dotted my forearms. I wanted to scream from anger and sing with excitement and curl up and sleep off the stress. Leaving Alton had been tough. I went back to my room and started packing my stuff, and my brother watched, and I didn't want to say anything because if I started talking, I might start crying. And then he started freaking out, which was very un-Luke of him.
Ben, don't leave. Come on. You know Dad, he'll be back to normal in like 3 days, and it will be like none of this ever happened.
That's what I'm afraid of, I said, clenching my jaw and measuring my words really carefully so my voice didn't crack.
You're afraid of that?
I'm not doing it anymore, okay? I can't do this again, okay?
Where are you going?
Colorado.
Ben!
My brother whined. He sounded 6 all of a sudden, and it hit me in my chest.
Don't go, Ben! Don't go, please!
I gotta go, buddy. I'll be back.
Uncle Max was gone 5 years.
Please, Ben, don't leave me. Please.
I'm not Uncle Max, I said, but at this point I was shaking because I couldn't hold the feelings in anymore. Don't worry.
Then he had an all-out tantrum, jumping on his bed and kicking and pounding his mattress.
You can't do this! You can't go!
I ran over to him. Come on, buddy, hold it together. It's okay, buddy.
No, it's not okay. This sucks!
Tears streamed down his face, and I closed my eyes and leaned in to hug him. He punched me in the chest hard. His flailing fist clipped me in the sternum. I was shocked, and my body's reaction was to punch back. I'm glad I didn't. I'm so glad I didn't. Instead, I squeezed him harder until he squeezed back. And then I grabbed the back of his skull in my two hands and moved his face so that he was looking directly into my eyes. I'm not him. Them. I'm not Uncle Max, and I'm not Dad. I'm not running from you, Luke. You have my phone number. We can talk every day. I have to go away because I can't be here anymore and be me.
You mean gay?
No, I mean me. He softened up then, like he understood in a way, and we got to say a real goodbye. He asked me to call tomorrow, and I promised I would, and I did. This morning, we talked about nothing, and it was great. Mom was hard, too, or maybe not hard, just sad. When I walked out with my suitcase, she was in the kitchen drinking a beer and reading a book about herbs.
Where are you staying?
She asked.
With Rafe, going to Colorado.
This time of night? No, go in the morning.
We have a flight in the morning. I'll go to his hotel at the airport. It's fine.
It's fine, she repeated flat.
She sipped her beer.
I don't know, Benny. Is it my fault? I should have straightened your dad out years ago.
It's not your fault, I said, going over and hugging her. You get why I'm leaving, right?
Oh, I get it, she said.
I love you, Mom.
Love you too, Benny. Don't get too crazy, hear?
And you come back here.
You know it'll be okay with your dad.
I didn't know that, but I nodded anyway. And then there I was, driving and driving until way after midnight, the roads spreading out in front of me, miles and miles and miles. Country roads where all you see is the road ahead of you illuminated by headlights are the loneliest place in the world. Then highways, which were surprisingly busy for so late. 5 hours to Boston. It was 3 in the morning when I got there, and I was more tired than I'd ever been. I had to park in this crazy circular structure at a skyscraper hotel right in the middle of town. Too tall, too loud, especially for how exhausted I felt. Rafe came to the door in boxers and hugged me tight, and I just about collapsed into his arms. And this time, I had no problem falling asleep. And here I was, on an airplane, going to Colorado to, I didn't know, visit? Still tired, still unsure of everything. I glanced over at Rafe, who was my best friend, who I loved, who just about 3 months ago I was so mad at I thought we'd never talk again. And we got past it. That filled me with some hope. Maybe this was just today with Dad. Maybe things would get better. Rafe was reading a book called Two Boys Kissing. I reached over and pinched him on the neck.
Ow,
he said, continuing to read. Do you think things will ever be normal at school again? I asked Rafe. He put down his book.
Were things ever really normal there? I had a feeling you were thinking something like that.
I was thinking about a lot of things. I was actually thinking about how it had been a while since I'd thought about history stuff. World War II. I used to have a constant running monologue, like the History Channel was in my brain. This was the first time I could remember where that all went away.
Hard to live in the past when the present is so busy.
It's been busy, all right.
The cheating thing, that surprised me.
Why'd you do it, Ben?
I was too tired to get into it. Insecurity. He nodded like he got that.
I don't know. I guess I've never really understood the whole emphasis on achieve, achieve, achieve that you have, he said.
You also don't come from a family that has nothing. Rafe took a sip of his Bloody Mary mix, which, by the way, was absolutely disgusting.
I was thinking about that just now, he said.
That I come from nothing?
No, that you think you come from nothing.
I felt my jaw tightening. This callous attitude about what my family did or did not have really bugged me. But who was I to say something when Rafe's family had footed the bill for my ticket to Boulder and had offered to put me up for an extended period? What if Rafe and I got into a big fight? Would I be homeless? I wiped my hair out of my eyes, and this crazy thing happened. I began to cry. On a plane. Rafe put my head on his shoulder and massaged my scalp and let me cry. And for once in my life, I wasn't my dad, telling myself to simmer down or man up or some other way of telling me to be more up or down than I truly was. I just let myself cry on a plane in front of people who weren't gawking exactly from across the aisle, but who were definitely looking. I could feel their stares without looking up. When the tears subsided, I picked my head off Rafe's shoulder and turned to him and said,
I don't know what I have anymore.
And he said,
You have whatever I have.
I said, What if I never get to go home again? And he said,
You'll have a different home.
I wasn't sure that those simple answers did it for me, but they were all I had, and as we flew over Indiana and Illinois, I said,
I'm tired of being afraid.
Rafe squeezed my hand.
Sometimes I get afraid, too, he said. Like, what if you fall in love with some girl? You are still attracted to girls, right?
Yeah, but...
But what?
Relax, I said. I'm a one-person guy, and that one person is you, and that's all that matters.
Well, we have each other, so that's something,
Rafe said, rubbing my arm.
I looked out the window, and the green squares of farmland below us looked like pieces of a seemingly unsolvable puzzle that were already miraculously in place.
Chapter 46. Mr. Goldberg is a lip kisser. At the Denver airport baggage claim as we waited for my duffel bag, Mr. G ran over when he saw us and proceeded to lay a wet one first on Rafe's mouth and then on mine. My sons! He yelled. I surreptitiously wiped my mouth while Rafe and his dad were hugging, forgetting that Mrs. Goldberg, who hadn't sprinted over to us, was watching. She gave me a warm smile and a squishy hug into her freckled boobs.
Thanks for letting me come, I said, holding on to her a bit because I needed the comfort.
Are you kidding? We wouldn't have it any other way,
she said, before planting a drier, more appropriate kiss than that of her husband on my cheek. As we got on the toll road that would take us north and west to Boulder, I stared at the snow-capped mountains and remembered skiing at Thanksgiving. How Rafe and the Goldbergs had gone out of their way to make me feel at home, and how they didn't seem to think it was a big deal to give me experiences I'd never had. Dinners out at fancy restaurants with cloth napkins? Sure, why not? Rafe would whine about all the different ingredients as he was more meat and potatoes. Meanwhile, I'd be savoring every new thing I could try. Aioli, truffle foam, gastrique this and that. Rafe asked if we could stop at Smashburger for some lunch, but Mr. G looked at his watch and said,
There's no t-
Rafe's mom interrupted.
We'll get you food at home.
Oh, no, Rafe said. Please, no.
Over Thanksgiving, we'd wanted to get something to eat after we landed, and Rafe's parents had said the same thing. We'd gone straight to their home, where they'd created a Mountain Luau-themed surprise party for us.
Normally, the specter of a repeat would have made me want to jump out of the moving car, but not today. You know what? I could use a goddamn party right about now, I said. Bring it on. Mrs. Goldberg glanced back from the passenger's seat and said, Thank you. At least one of you has some gratitude. We did this in half a day, Rafe. Have a little fucking grace. Rafe laughed, not derisively. Whoa, he said. I'm sorry, I just... We've spent all morning getting anyone and everyone we can over to the house. It's been a lot, Rafe, a lot. Sorry, Mom, you're right. Thank you for throwing us a surprise party to honor Ben's suspension. I felt a jolt in my chest, but then I looked up and saw Rafe was just joking around, and his callousness made Mr. G laugh, and soon Mrs. Goldberg was chuckling a bit, too. I was thinking how incredibly unlike my life this scene was. I loved it at Thanksgiving, and I was hoping I wasn't too much of a mess to love it this time, too. It turned out to be an inside party. Perhaps because it was set up in a day, there was no overriding theme, or at least not an obvious one. What there was a playlist that seemed particularly something. I'm not a music maven, but as Rafe hugged relatives and his best friend, Claire Olivia, and way more kids than were here last time, I could tell the first song was Elton John. As Claire Olivia and I gave each other the I remember you wave and said what's up, a song that seemed to be called I Am What I Am blared. After that was that song about rainbows from The Wizard of Oz. What's with the music? I asked when I went over to grab some green-looking punch that I later found out was kale pineapple juice. Ugh. Mrs. Goldberg tilted her head like I was an innocent child. I made this for you, sweetie. It's a musical trip through gay history. Thanks, I said, thinking, thanks? These are songs you should know, she said. As you come out, you'll find that there's generations upon generations of talented gay men and women who changed the world and paved the way for you. She touched my shoulder. I am so proud of you, Ben. It's not easy coming out. Not easy at all. I was too tired to explain to her that I wasn't coming out as gay or even bi. Unless she was telling me that there were generations upon generations of talented gay men who were otherwise straight until they met her son, none of this was particularly meaningful to me.
I hear you're transitioning, an elderly woman said in my ear.
I recognized her as Rafe's grandmother, who was memorable in that she wound up topless after doing the limbo at the last party. Hi, I said, and she grabbed me and gave me a tight hug, and I tried to figure out if she was Mr. or Mrs. Goldberg's mom. It was unclear. What?
They tell me you're transitioning. I think you'll make a beautiful large-boned woman.
Mother,
Mrs. Goldberg said. She gave me an apologetic look.
What I said was that you are in transition.
I was so lost. Was this more gender-fluid stuff? Where was Toby when you needed something explained to you?
Well, whatever your gender orientation, I think you're a lovely human being,
Rafe's grandma said, leaving me and Rafe's mom standing there. That was actually very sweet, I said. Claire Olivia was wearing what appeared to be a World War I Navy sailor's hat on her head. It did not particularly mesh with her outfit. Vintage cowboy boots, tight jeans, and a solid yellow long-sleeve t-shirt.
Please tell me you're staying and you're both enrolling at Rangeview. Please? I need my Shay-Shay back, and Rangeview desperately needs an out gay couple, she said.
I have no idea, I said truthfully. We just got here.
Fine, but I fully expect to tag along to every single thing you boys do the next few weeks. Everything but the bed stuff, because I'm not that kind of girl.
Okay, I said, just as Rafe came over to rescue me. Give him a break, he said, perhaps gauging my bewildered expression. He's been a bolder gay boy for like 2 minutes. She curtsied as a way of apologizing, and we made tentative plans with her to go to a place called the Laughing Goat that night. When she walked away, I turned to Rafe.
I'm really not comfortable with everyone telling me I'm gay, I said.
He gave me an, aw, isn't that sweet, look.
You're my boyfriend, no?
Yes.
Then I think you're gonna have to get used to people assuming you're gay, or bi. Should we tell people you're bi?
I just looked at him and shook my head.
Can I have a rest, please? Would that be okay? Can I, like, go upstairs? I'm so, so tired, Rafe.
He looked hurt.
We're fine, I said, sighing. It's just a lot. I was up till 3 driving, and I have no idea how to do this right now.
He took my arm and led me upstairs. At the top of the stairs, he gave me a big kiss, which half made me happy and half made me want to strangle him.
I love you, Benny.
Love you too, I said. And I was relieved when he left me alone to take a nap in his bed. I woke up in time for dinner, and the party had ended, thankfully. I felt sheepish that I'd ducked out, and I hoped the Goldbergs weren't mad at me. I walked downstairs, and the family was sitting around on a cream-colored sectional that was crazy comfortable, as I recalled from Thanksgiving. You're up, Rafe said, and his mom and dad turned and looked. They smiled when they saw me.
Yep. Sorry about wimping out on the party.
His mother waved her hand like it was in the past.
Come sit down.
I sat on the couch next to Rafe, who put his hand on my leg. I squeezed his fingers and let go, and when his hand lingered, part of me wanted to ask him to move it, and I wasn't sure why.
We have something for you. A gift,
Mrs. Goldberg said, and she handed me a wrapped present that appeared to be a book.
Thanks, I managed. Wow. I opened it. It was a survival guide for queer teens.
I studied the back, or more like I pretended to study the back. Too much, somehow. Way, way too much.
The coming out process can be challenging, so we wanted to give you something really good to read that would help,
she said, beaming at me.
Thanks.
Where's my present?
Rafe asked, pretending to be pissed.
It's only seeable when the dishwasher is empty, his mom said, and Rafe groaned.
She turned back to me.
How did it go when your parents found out you were gay?
I knew she was a major advocate for LGBT people and all, but I had to just say it, even if it upset her. I gathered my strength and spoke.
I don't consider myself gay, Mrs. Goldberg.
Oh, bye, she said.
I shrugged and looked at Rafe, who grinned at me.
He hasn't landed there quite yet.
He lowered his voice and did a stage whisper.
He's in denial.
I stood up quickly.
Please excuse me, I said to Rafe's parents, and I headed upstairs.
We had the go-ahead to sleep in the same room, but for some reason I went into the guest room and flopped down there. A few minutes later, Rafe knocked on the door.
Sorry, he said. You're staying in here?
Need some more rest, I said, and I studied the baby blue comforter and waited for him to leave. I didn't know what was going on, but something bigger than annoyance was happening to me, and it felt like an explosion, and I was so scared that if I exploded at Rafe, I'd have nothing. The confusion and conflict felt like jitters in my arms and legs.
Wait. Are you doing one of those walking away things?
He said, his tone sarcastic, like he was basically joking. Would you leave me alone? I yelled.
God, Rafe, can I have half a day to process that I'm fucking homeless without you and your parents telling me what I have to do and who I am? Jesus!
Rafe's eyes got big, and I saw the wound in the crease of his eyebrows. He nodded gently and backed out of the room. Chapter 47. My dad was always fond of saying that everything out there was a dressed-up version of what's already here, by which he meant there was nothing better than Alton.
You think them Hawaiian people are so special and fancy? Get near one of them when they have a stomachache. You'll see what they're made of, he'd say.
And part of me knew that was my dad talking about stuff he knew nothing about, and part of me bought into it. Walking along Boulder Creek the next morning, I realized my dad was dead wrong. Even with the trees bare from winter, I was pretty sure the creek running through the city was the prettiest place I'd ever been. The sound of the water tumbling over rocks calmed me, and in the distance I could see the Rocky Mountains, which were so much taller than anything we had back home. The sunlight peering through the brittle, snow-covered branches lent warmth to the scenery, like you could taste the hot chocolate waiting for you. That was never the case in Alton, for me anyway. Rafe's house was less than a mile away, so we hiked over and strolled along the frozen creek. We didn't say much at first, and I knew I had some apologizing to do from the night before. A squirrel flashed by our feet, chasing God knows what. I'm sorry, I said.
What for?
You know. He stopped walking.
I accept, but I kind of want to hear why you're sorry.
I started walking again, and he stayed with me.
I'm sorry for being nasty to you last night. I don't know why I'm mad, to be honest. I have no idea.
I guess it's a lot. His gloved finger touched mine tentatively. I wrapped my hand around his, and we kept walking, stepping carefully over downed branches and huge roots.
Yeah.
We walked some more, and I realized other things were bothering me. All my life I'd let those kinds of things go, but here I was doing all sorts of things I didn't do.
You know, it really did bother me when you made that joke, the one about denial, I said.
Huh?
I stepped over a mud puddle. Your mom was asking if I was bi, and you whispered real loud that I was in denial.
I was joking.
I stopped walking.
I get that. But do you get that I'm not in denial? I feel like I've told you 100 times already that I don't think I'm gay or bi beyond you, and every time it's like you don't absorb that.
He stuffed his hands in the side pockets of his purple jacket.
I feel like you're me, but a few years earlier and with parents who don't accept you.
Yeah, but I'm not, I said.
I could hear him exhale dramatically.
Well, you're definitely not straight in bed with me.
I looked out at the mountains, fixating on their snowy caps.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that I'm Ben, and you are Rafe, and we are not the same, and you don't know what my future is just because you came out a few years ago, okay?
Rafe didn't say anything, and part of me was worried that it was too much, that I was being too contrary, and that he was going to just walk away from me. But then I thought about the baseball team, and how maybe it was okay to speak your mind and disagree, and not every argument had to lead to someone, well, leaving.
We started walking again.
I also think you don't get privilege, I said.
Oh, come on,
he said, and our jackets rubbed together, making a hissing sound.
No, I really don't think you understand. Like, you don't get how lucky you are to have parents who accept you. And on the plane, when you corrected me, I said I came from nothing, and you said you think you come from nothing. I don't know if you understand how aggravating that is. When I was growing up, if we didn't have a chicken to process and we were out of eggs, we might not eat that night. Do you get that?
I don't think you get what I was saying, he said, and I could hear the defensiveness in his voice.
Being poor isn't nothing. You still have parents.
Yes, but having no money is still having no money, and you have no idea what it's like to have literally $43 in my pocket until June and no way to get more. Do you get that? How you have a safety net and I have none?
How fucking scared I am that you'll just drop me again and I'll be stuck out here with nothing?
We walked side by side in silence. I could feel his simmering anger. And then, as we walked farther, it was like the snow dissipated the bad feeling. Maybe he finally heard me.
Sorry, he said. Am I a horrible boyfriend?
I cracked a smile and squeezed his hand.
Nah, you're just Rafe, which is pretty great and totally worth putting up with the fact that you don't always listen.
I could feel him bristle a bit next to me.
Thanks.
We walked some more. Water scurried down the creek, which was nearly dry.
I guess there's one thing I don't understand, he said.
Shoot.
What do you mean you're homeless? I mean, you weren't kicked out. You can go home.
I knew what he meant. I'd been thinking the same thing. It wasn't as if I couldn't go home, and I knew that there were plenty of kids out there who literally couldn't. Yet at the same time, I felt homeless. I couldn't explain it. I tried anyway.
I don't know. It's a feeling, like I don't exactly know where my home is. I don't think you get that. I don't think you get... Get what?
I stumbled a bit over a particularly high tree root.
Never mind. Ben, you can say stuff to me. My parents and I actually have arguments and live to tell about it. No offense.
I chuckled. None taken. I've noticed that. It's weird. I'm not used to it.
I know.
I guess the truth is, I'm a little mad at you.
Mad at me? What did I do?
It's not what you did. It's what's happened since I've known you. In 6 months, I've gone from being an A student and a standout in two sports to being this.
I know you're not pegging your cheating on knowing me.
No, I said. Not at all. I'm talking about being confused about who I am and what I want, unsure where my home is, having a dad who thinks I'm worthless.
Well, I think he's worthless, Rafe said.
You sound a little like your mom sometimes, I said back. He exhaled and said,
I'm not sure that's such a bad thing.
Maybe not.
So you're mad at me?
It's not rational, but maybe. Rafe stopped, gave me a quick kiss on the cheek, grabbed my hand, and then we started up our walking again.
Don't stay mad too long, okay?
I squeezed his hand and smiled a little. Okay. At dinner that night, Mrs. Goldberg had fashioned herself a huge white ribbon that read, Mother of the Freakin' Universe. She was wearing it over one shoulder and across her chest and torso. I thought it was hilarious. Rafe thought it was nauseating.
What can I say? I suddenly have two sons. My heart is full. Oh my God. I'm so moving in with the Carvers, Rafe said.
I said, yes, next on Fox, parent swap. I'd never lived somewhere before where you could just say whatever was on your mind at the dinner table, and suddenly I was taking it maybe a little too far. I would totally watch an episode of Rafe trying to milk a cow, I said.
I could milk a cow.
I'm sure there are aspects of our canoodling that could translate, I said, and Mrs. Goldberg laughed. Mr. Goldberg made a sour face.
Okay, then, Mr. G said. In other news...
Did Ben just make Dad uncomfortable by being too out there? Did that just happen? Rafe asked.
I chewed and chewed and chewed my tofu. I didn't mind the taste of the stuff, but the texture left a lot to be desired. I knew Rafe felt the same way, but when his parents believed in something, that tofu is food of the gods, for instance, there was little chance of changing their minds.
Can we talk about something serious? Mrs. Goldberg said. Or would you rather continue to freak out my surprisingly prudish husband, who certainly wasn't such a prude back at Oberlin when...
Mom! Rafe said. Yes, please, something serious, anything but that.
She smiled.
Ben, you're perfectly welcome to stay here and enroll in Rangeview. She turned to her son. And darling, we can re-enroll you. If you feel you're more safe and more comfortable here, we can figure it out.
I studied the table in front of me. Suddenly, the salt shakers in the shape of Buddha and the lilac butter dish changed before my eyes. They became palpable to me. Not like I couldn't touch them before, but now that touch would change meaning. I could live here? Could I? Would I? Rafe's stare brought me back, and we shared a wide-eyed look. I wondered what he was thinking. I wondered what I was thinking. I simply didn't know.
Of course, if you boys continue to see each other, we might have Ben stay with the Caseys, just so there's a bit of normalcy for you both. Dating and living together so soon might be a bit much, don't you think?
It was all happening so quickly, and I couldn't put it all together. Me living with Claire Olivia's family? What would happen with mine? Would they cease to be my family? That thought stabbed me in the side. It was all too fast. All I knew was how I felt today. How was I supposed to know how I'd feel in 2 weeks, let alone 2 years? And staying here? That felt, well, it felt like something that would become a thing in my family, like Uncle Max going away. Luke would not like that.
"You look flummoxed, Ben," she said. "Can you share your thoughts with us?"
I really wasn't sure I could. I opened my mouth, but no words came out. I tried again. "Thank you," I said. "You're so nice, and you know what? I kind of love you." I glanced at both Mr. and Mrs. Goldberg and watched them share a sweet smile that felt incredibly intimate. They knew each other so well. Someday maybe I'd share looks like that with someone, maybe even Rafe. I think I need to go back to Natick and finish what I started, though. And at some point, I think I'll need to go home and work things out there. Mrs. Goldberg gave me a proud smile, and that made me smile, too. "Thank you for the offer. Really, it means a lot to me." She said,
"Also, I want to talk to you about PFLAG. I'd like for you to come to a meeting. It may really help with this coming out process."
Mrs. Goldberg was waiting for me to respond. I looked from her to Mr. G, who at that very moment was looking at me with more affection than my dad had in a lifetime. "I know you don't get this," I said, "but I'm really not gay. I don't feel like that." Mrs. Goldberg sighed.
"Jesus, I feel like I just had this conversation with Rafe."
"I'm not," I said. "To me, gay means attracted to boys. I'm attracted to one boy. I'll take gay for Rafe, but if I'm being honest," I took a deep breath, "I really feel like I'm straight."
"I think perhaps you're not ready to come out," Mrs. Goldberg said, spooning some cauliflower onto her plate.
"Aren't these labels up to me?"
"I know your generation is different, and I know I shouldn't be labeling, but I must say this is a perfect example of bisexual invisibility."
I looked Mrs. Goldberg in the eye. She was a beautiful person, an individual. She spoke her mind. She let me speak mine. That, to me, was beautiful. "I love your son. Isn't that enough?" She pressed her lips together in that "isn't that sweet" way.
"I suppose it is."
I grabbed for Rafe's hand. "This is my person. That's all that matters." Rafe squeezed my hand. "To me, straight and gay and bi are just words. None of them really feel like me. I'm Ben, you know?"
"Nice to meet you, Ben," Mr. G said.
"I'm Ben, and I like World War II history, and I grew up on a farm, and I play baseball, and I'm an introvert, and I'm gay for Rafe." Mrs. Goldberg smiled that beautiful smile at me. "All those labels are just, I think the world is more comfortable if it can put you in a box. I was thinking about Toby and his left-handed paths, and how by coming out as gender fluid, he had really gone hard left, which takes more bravery than I have, I think. and I was thinking about what Hannah had taught me about vulnerability, which I guess means opening yourself up to being hurt, and really the kind of courage Toby showed when he chose to follow his own path was a perfect example of being vulnerable.